It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host on WGN Radio. Thank you for being with me. I'm going to start off today with a simple title, Hiking with Huns. That's Hungarian partridge. And for the past, well, ever since 1981, so that's over 40 years, I have had the pleasure, with the exception of the COVID year, of walking the prairies of either the Dakotas. Actually, I walked the prairies in the Dakotas of the COVID year, but the prairies of the Dakotas or Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta. And I call this hiking with Huns because it's really a walk. It's a walk to the horizon. It's a walk of freedom. It's a walk of fresh air, great dogs, friends. And I just each year love the smell of the north wind and the smell of the freshly cut barley and wheat that it so proliferates the Canadian prairie. And this year was no different. Although this year is probably the best year in decades, if not in a lifetime, for Hungarian partridge and sharp-tailed grouse on the prairies of Canada, particularly western Saskatchewan and eastern Alberta. And when you say that, that means it's very, very bad news for ducks, because upland nesting birds and waterfowl are an inversion. When conditions are wet and all the sloughs have water in them in the spring and the summer, upland birds lose the places that they like to nest, and their populations decline severely. Waterfowl, on the other hand, love those places, and their populations increase. Well, certainly for the last half dozen years, if not more, but the last three in particular, the prairies of North America have really been dry. And this has resulted in an absolute explosion of Hungarian partridge and sharp-tailed grouse. And in case you're wondering why we call them Hungarian partridge, because that's where they came from. They came from Europe. Hungarian partridge are not native to North America. Sharp-tailed grouse certainly are, but Hungarian partridge are not. And yet they are one of the great game birds in the world today, and they probably are the dominant game bird for upland game birds in all of the Northwest U.S. prairies and into Canada. So when you go hiking for Huns, you're going to walk 6 to 10 miles in an afternoon or a morning. You're not going to walk 20 miles in a day, but you're going to walk 6 to 10 miles, and you're simply going to get out of your truck. There are very few fence rows. Unfortunately, there are a lot fewer ditches and places where birds can hide. Out in the fields, you used to have under the old soil bank program, you used to have all kinds of hedgerows that dotted the landscape all across Canada. Farm fields were bisected with long, miles-longs of little hedgerows of berry bushes and grass, and this was just fantastic cover. You don't have that anymore, but the birds have adapted, and they get into the low spots in the fields, and they have used to learn the roadside ditches and the fence lines that remained with great abandon. And so you just walk. And you're going to put 6 to 10 miles, maybe more, behind you or underneath you during the course of a prairie afternoon, in my case, because in the morning we're searching for ducks. The wind's blowing. We had incredibly mild weather. In fact, it was some days just simply too hot. It was in the mid-70s. If you can imagine the mid-70s in the middle of October in Saskatchewan and Alberta, that's what we faced, hot and dry. Very hard for the dogs to scent. And so when a covey got up, often they got up without the dogs having had the advantage of flushing them or pointing them. And then when you shot one, you better mark it, because the setting conditions were so poor that it was very hard for dogs to even find a down bird. So on the prairies, you really walk to the horizon. You don't get in your car, walk 100 yards, get back in your car, drive a quarter of a mile and walk. You simply walk, and you walk in the rolling hills and the rolling grasslands, and much of this is still native prairie in western Saskatchewan and eastern Alberta. Never been plowed, never seen anything but a buffalo or a cow on it. It's the way it's been for millennia. And the wind blows over the grass, and let me tell you, when the wind starts to blow, a Chinook comes off the Rockies, it is really blowing, and you can't believe how hard that wind can blow. So you got to get off the hilltops and get down in the coulees, because that's where the birds are going to be. And then you hear this incredible tut, 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 and that's the sharp-tailed grouse flushing. Sometimes 10 yards away, sometimes a quarter of a mile away. They are the most unpredictable and the greatest of game birds. So a walk on the prairies is also a chance just to smell the air. There's nobody around you. There's nobody. It's just miles and miles and miles of wheat grass, of short grass prairie, of barley, of harvested wheat, of alfalfa, and you hope every so often you put up a covey of birds, and then you keep walking. It's something I've done for over 40 years every fall, and I have to tell you, it's a little bit of a birth of freedom to be able to just simply get out and walk. You used to be able to do this in the Dakotas. North Dakota was wide open country 20 years ago. Park your car and simply walk. Now you got no trespassing signs everywhere. Outfitters have leased up the land, and North Dakotans are no longer really welcoming of Americans from outside of North Dakota. In fact, they've changed the trespass laws in so many places. And in Saskatchewan, they've also changed the trespass laws, not for the good. It used to be in Saskatchewan, if an area was posted, you had to stay out. If an area was fenced with cattle in it, you had to stay out. Otherwise, it was open country. Not true anymore. You have to have the landowner's permission to get off a public right-of-way and onto private property. That changed 2 years ago, and obviously it's changed things dramatically, but these farms are so large that once you have one landowner's permission, you really have more land than you can possibly walk. But something else is happening, which I want to touch on before the break, and then I'll put Canada to the rest probably for the year, and that is the attitudes of the landowners are changing towards American hunters, and it's really, really, really sad to see. Having spent much of my life wandering the prairies, knocking on farm doors, being invited in for a cup of coffee or a fresh piece of baked bread or even a baked pie, and spending evenings around farm tables with Saskatchewan and Manitoba and Albertan farmers, we were always welcome. Now, you knock on a farm door and their attitude is, oh no, another American hunter. Americans have ruined what was a great thing. But it's not Americans like you and me. It's American outfitters due to both their greed and the laws that exist. So American outfitters have moved up into Canada in a big way. And whereas you or I might have been in our car and knocked on a farmer's door and asked if we could go chase a covey of huns or sharptail or shoot some ducks on a slough in his back, he was happy to see us. He didn't see many people. Now one outfitter's got 6, 8, 10 guides working for them, driving all over the countryside, knocking on every door there is, and there aren't that many, and asking, can we tie up your land? We got a group coming. And they literally are bumping into each other. And when you show up at a farmer's door and you knock on it, he's already seen an outfitter, probably 2 or 3 or 4, maybe even that week. And he's no longer offering you a piece of pie unless you've had a long-time relationship with him, which in my case, and in many farmers' cases, I have, so they're happy to see me. But it is a changed game, and it's changed because of the internet, and it's changed because of the American outfitters. And I think it's coming. So, you know, we've talked a lot in the air about Manitoba and what Manitoba did to limit Americans coming to Manitoba, and I don't agree with it at all because I think they did it in an incorrect way. It's not the American freelancer, the person that goes up to hunt or fish, that's the problem. It's the professional outfitter that's the problem. But unfortunately, Manitoba punished everybody. But I think all across Canada, you're going to see the Canadian provinces say to Americans, outfitters, you're not welcome. Freelance hunters, you are welcome, but we're going to be a lot more restrictive because the outfitters created so many problems. The other thing that's going to happen in Saskatchewan is farmers are simply going to stop providing access to Americans. And this is already occurring in certain areas of central Saskatchewan where the hunting pressure is so great. And farmers are just tired of Americans. We are ruining what has been a generationally a great thing that our forefathers have enjoyed. Families have gone up for generations to hunt on the Canadian prairies in the fall. But now, all of a sudden, because of all the technology we have, and frankly, I don't have another way to put it, because of the greed of a few outfitters, people who want to commercially hunt, they are ruining the whole deal for the rest of us. And as I left Canada and put Alberta behind me the other day, I was both elated at having had the chance to walk the prairies free in the prairie wind, finding a few birds with a great dog and great friends. But I also realized the game is changing quickly, and that we are not as welcome as we once were, and that a few people, a few bad apples, if you will, this being American outfitters that simply are taking over the Canadian prairie, they're going to ruin it for all of us. So hopefully we can get our hands around this before it's too late. Canada and the Canadian prairies are such a wonderful place to go, even if the hassle of getting into Canada is 10 times what it was, and the same for coming back to the United States. Boy, you better have dotted every I and crossed every T and have every number right on the serial of your gun, and you better have all of your birds marked correctly, or it's going to be an awful experience. As it is now, it's a time-consuming experience, and both borders, Canadian and U.S., are looking for every reason to either write you a ticket or throw you in the back room for a few hours. That's never the way it was. Anyway, times do change. When I come back in just a moment, I am going to talk about something else that's changing, and that appears to be attitudes towards hunters in the U.S. and a program called HATS. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and hope you enjoyed the first part of the show. I'm going to move now to something called HATS, the conservation newsletter for HATS, hunters, anglers, trappers, and shooters, stewards of conservation. We do a great job of preaching to the choir, meaning ourselves, and we do a lousy job of talking to 320 million Americans who don't know why we hunt and fish and love the outdoors so much. So once again, an organization is coming together alarmed by the apparent fact, I don't know if it's a fact, it's opinion polls, but opinion polls that say that Americans' tolerance of people who hunt is declining. And for those of you listening who love to hunt, it's not good news. You obviously know I've spent my entire life in 2 months, 25 years here on WGN Radio talking about why conservation is so important, why people who hunt and fish are among the greatest conservationists, and so on. It's falling on deaf ears. The argument that, well, your licensed sales hire people to run departments of natural resources, that argument falls flat. If you don't hunt or fish and you're just an ordinary citizen, you don't really care that hunters pay the salaries of people in the Department of Natural Resources, because hunting and fishing is not something you're terribly interested in. You're much more interested in the bike trail being maintained or having access to a state park or having a boat ramp fixed. So as people who hunt and fish as a part of the population continue to decline, both in real numbers and as a percentage of the population, we obviously are losing much of our political clout. So this organization, HATS as they call it, is going to try to help the American public understand some of the quote-unquote terrific things that sportsmen and women do, such as providing financial resources, such as controlling overpopulation of deer, as an example, such as being able to trap nuisance animals, and providing funding through the Pittman-Robertson Act and other Dingell Johnson and other elements, Wallop Row, that create funds for managing wildlife and natural lands that everyone enjoys. And they are going to spend quite a bit of money. They plan to spend something like $5 million doing this in the coming year. But the question is, will it really matter? Those of you listening this morning with me, either you already love to hunt and fish and you get it, or if you're just listening because you love WGN Radio and I happen to be on the dial when you turned on the radio, thank you, by the way, for doing that. how are you going to best understand the values of why we have hunting and fishing and how important it is to society? And I don't think it's based upon who pays bills. I think it's much more based upon why wildlife management is so important so that we have a healthy society and we have healthy wildlife populations. If hunters didn't control deer populations, we'd have so many more deer accidents with cars. We'd have so much more overgrazing. We'd have all kinds of issues. Hunters form a very, very important role when it comes to managing deer, elk, antelope populations in particular. So, and fishermen do the same thing. They stop overpopulation of certain fish species in rivers and lakes, and they manage for size. We have a very important wildlife management role that cannot be done by anybody else. And I think that's really the message. All of us who go afield or go on the water, we do so because we love to be there with friends and family. And I personally can tell you the greatest joy in the world for me is taking my kids, who now are all young adults, but having spent a lifetime with my kids in the outdoors. And for many of you, it may be your grandkids and your kids, but it's that bonding of families in the outdoors that really, really makes this what it is. Very few people hunt alone. Yes, you may go sit in a deer stand alone, but you come back to camp at night in a duck blind. Certainly that's social. If you're hunting pheasants or quail, you're generally doing it with friends, and you come back to a camp or a motel room at night somewhere. And if you're fishing, you're in a boat with somebody, you're on a stream with someone. This is not solitary. We may be solitary for a few hours in the field, but we come back gregariously. And it's all part of the lifestyle that makes hunting and fishing what it is and is such an important part of our heritage. That's what 320 million Americans might understand, that without us, we don't have a lot of wildlife management, and we're going to have huge, huge problems with wildlife and fisheries populations. I'm not sure what the answer is, but fewer and fewer Americans every year seem to be less and less tolerant of the things that here we are in the middle of October, of the things that we hold so precious. So hats off to this group called HATS, hunters, anglers, trappers, and shooters, for trying to at least improve cultural acceptance of gun ownership, hunting, fishing, trapping, target shooting. And it's all sponsored by the Outdoor Stewards of Conservation Foundation, which is working on it with what it calls a first ever PSA, public service announcement, that informs the general population that hunters and target shooters and anglers not only are primary funders of conservation, but have a huge role in wildlife management. I don't know that the primary funders of conservation is a selling point. Maybe that we're the greatest managers of wildlife is a better selling point. In any event, this PSA, they hope to distribute over 11,000 radio stations and television stations in the U.S., and they say it's going to reach more than 200 million people. I don't know if it'll do that or not, but once again, congratulations for trying. There's no one single way to do this, but we certainly need to have more and more effort of understanding why something we hold so dear, which has been part of our heritage for so long, is going to continue in America. So in the next 30 seconds that I have left, I'm simply going to say duck seasons are opening across the Midwest, in Illinois in particular. We opened yesterday in Illinois, and we open next week in the Central Zone. So the North Zone's already open. Hope you have a safe week in the great outdoors. And next week, I'm going to talk a little bit about the upcoming election, and I hope to have Britt Hume as my guest to talk about conservation and politics and whatever happened to conservation being front and center in American politics. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.